Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service with public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on natural disasters when we come back. You know, 3,000 years ago, before the science of meteorology was even thought of, Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes 1 verse 7 that all of the rivers run into the sea, and yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. Now every year the continents and islands of this earth pour down into the oceans a stupendous volume of water. It's 286,000 cubic miles of water flowing into the oceans every year. And for century after century, millennium after millennium, this has been going on. And the sea hasn't increased its level by so much as an inch. Now, how is that possible? Well, we call it the circle or cycle of evaporation and precipitation. The writer of Ecclesiastes said that the ocean maintains its level in spite of this gigantic annual influx, because the rivers go back to the place from whence they came. And indeed they do. Every drop of rain that falls climbs back upon the Creator's elevator of evaporation to form themselves into clouds and to ride back to the head of their toboggan slide to begin their journey all over again. In modern science, the science of meteorology, we understand this, and we understand the laws. Modern science has learned what the writer of Ecclesiastes knew 3,000 years ago. Now, that's just one more of the many examples of science in the Bible. Now, this is one more of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School conducted twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. For more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package. Remember, that's free. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. And best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Well, are natural disasters natural? It's my contention that natural disasters are anything but natural. They are totally unnatural. The design mechanism on planet Earth is rain in due season, no hurricanes, no typhoons, no floods, and no drought. No sickness and no disease. That's not utopia, and that's just law and order. Now, there's a law in the Bible that says, you shall eat no manner of fat. It's in Leviticus 3, verse 17. You shall eat no manner of fat. Now, as a matter of law, for instance, in California, the legislature enacted a law, and it says that if any meat packer or wholesaler, jobber, should put more than 30% fat in the hamburger, he's guilty of a misdemeanor and shall be fined and imprisoned, and they spell it out. 30% fat in your hamburger. That's what you buy at McDonald's. And it's not that McDonald's is breaking any laws per se. They just buy the meat from Oscar Mayer or from Swift or Armor Star or whatever meat packer they're buying from. And of course, the meat packer, he's just following the law. The legislature made the law. They authorized 30% fat in the hamburger. Now, America has the highest incidence of cardiovascular disease in the world. I pointed this out earlier. When one person dies, it's a tragedy. When a million people die, it's a naked statistic. So when I say to you that 750,000 people are going to die this year in the United States from heart attack and or stroke, that's just a naked number. 1.5 million people are going to die. That's just a naked number. But when it's your husband, when it's your father, when it's your brother, it's a tragedy. You might even call it a disaster. Well, at least on your level, at your family level, when a family member dies, it's a tragedy, it's a disaster. But that's a disaster that is caused. It's not natural or normal. God Almighty, your Creator, told you not to eat fat. And you woke up and said, no, I'm going to eat fat because it tastes good. And I mentioned to you last time, I said, hell, if taste was the criteria for nutrition, we would all be healthy. We all eat what tastes good. Chocolate tastes great. It's broccoli and Brussels sprouts that don't taste very good. And I suppose that's God's fault. Had God made broccoli and Brussels sprouts taste like a Hershey bar or a Kit Kat or a Junior Mint, we would eat a whole lot more of it and we'd be a lot healthier. Unfortunately, the Hershey's company is not putting enough vitamins and minerals into their Hershey bars. I guess maybe that's the other side of the coin. Now, there's a cause and effect relationship here. The cause and effect relationship is that you've got a law that says don't eat fat, and you eat fat, and you get sick, and you die, or you have to have a Roto-Rooter job. Think about it for a minute. You decided for yourself that fat was good for you, and you're going to eat it. So you go to McDonald's and eat the fat. Plugs up your veins. Plugs up your arteries. Now you've got to have bypass surgery. Now it costs a lot of money, about $100,000. So you got to have insurance to pay for that. And so here you're out working your heart out, working away here in life. And you got to spend $10,000 a year to buy health insurance to pay for that $100,000 operation that you're going to need at some point down the road because you're eating these McDonald's burgers which are laced with 30% fat. Now, that's a simple cause and effect relationship. Now, let's suppose that you didn't eat fat. Well, if you didn't eat fat, then your veins wouldn't plug up. If your veins didn't plug up, you wouldn't need bypass surgery. If you didn't need bypass surgery, you wouldn't need insurance, and so you wouldn't be complaining about being one of those 44 million Americans living your life without health insurance. I wonder how many Africans, Asians, or Latin Americans have health insurance. You know, it's a matter of perspective. I don't have health insurance. I avoid health insurance like I avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD. The only people that need health insurance are people that are sick or expect to get sick. I'm not sick, and I don't expect to get sick because I don't violate any of the 18 health laws. And I'm not sitting here claiming to be righteous Rosie. I'm just sitting here telling you my common sense told me years ago I ought to stop doing that. Now, I used to smoke. I smoked Camel Studs for 9 years. I enjoyed every puff. When I wasn't smoking a Camel, I was smoking a White Owl cigar. Now, I thought smoking was pretty good. And then one day, it felt real good. I never complained about smoking. Then one day I read this article in Reader's Digest, said, hey, this smoking over here is going to kill you, it causes lung cancer. And I looked at that and I said, well, I can't believe this. You mean them tobacco companies out there have been lying to me and feeding me this crock that Camels were good for my T-zone? Camels are good for my health. Camels are good for my throat. And it's going to give me cancer. So I quit smoking in my own self-interest. Now, I might die from cancer, but it ain't going to be caused by smoking. I have eliminated that hazard. And I'm not going to get Alzheimer's disease. At least I'm not going to get Alzheimer's disease caused by the vaccine for the flu I'm not going to take that flu vaccine, so I'm going to reduce my risk of getting Alzheimer's disease by 1,000 or 10 times. 10 times, 1,000%. All right, now, let's take a look now at another cause and effect relationship that is in the process of creating a natural disaster. There is a disaster that's going to occur. Doesn't have to, but it's going to. And it's going to because we humans want to break this law. It's called the Land Sabbath Law. Let me read it to you. It's over here in Leviticus chapter 25. You'll see the Land Sabbath Law in verses 1 through 7 and the Jubilee Law from verses 8 through about verse 55. Now, there's a couple, three laws that are mentioned in here. Let me just read a couple of them to you. Now, let's take a look, and we'll follow through these laws, and I'll show you how they've been violated, and I'll show you what the cause and effect relationship is out here in the real world, out here in the Kroger and Safeway supermarkets every day. And you're living with it, and it's going to kill you. And when you die, somebody's going to feel real bad. Probably your wife or your children are going to feel real bad about you dying, Bob. And you're going to die because you're bringing it on yourself. I had a guy here one time who was going to school, and I brought up the subject of clean and unclean meat, and we're talking about pig, and he got really offended. I think he was a pig-eating Christian. And he said to me, "Nobody's going to tell me what to eat. Nobody is going to tell me what to eat." Well, okay, Bob. Don't let me get in your way. Let me be the last guy on planet Earth to tell you what to eat. I don't care. There's no skin off my back. When somebody dies from a coronary, he died from the coronary because he broke some laws. I think that you ought to be informed that there is a cause and effect relationship there, and then you can make your own decision. The student that I just mentioned to you, he made his decision. When he was here, he was 45. 10 years later, he died of a coronary at age 55. He's dead now. Been dead for 10 or 15 years. He made that statement to me in 1955. He was from Texas. He said, "Nobody's going to tell me what to eat." 10 years later, he was dead. Now, I'm not so smart. I didn't say that to the guy because I'm a great genius over here. I just told the guy that this is the way the game is played. Play the game this way and you'll score more points. If you don't play the game this way, you'll score fewer points and make more bogeys. Fewer birdies and more bogeys. It's up to you. You want to learn how to play the game or not? I don't care. All right, now let's take a look at the Land Sabbath game. Land Sabbath game works like this. The Eternal spoke unto Moses in Mount Sinai, saying, he said, "You speak now to the children of Israel, and you say to them, when you come into the land which I give them, then shall the land keep a Sabbath unto the Eternal. 6 years you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather the fruit thereof. But in the seventh year shall be a Sabbath of rest unto the land, a Sabbath for the Eternal. You shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard. That which grows of its own accord of your harvest you shall not reap, and neither shall you gather the grapes of the vine undressed." And it's a year of rest unto the land. "And the Sabbath of the land shall be meat for you, for you and for your servants, and for your maids, and for your hired servants, and for the stranger that sojourns with you, and for your cattle, and for the beasts that are in the land, shall all the increase thereof be meat." Meat means food. All right, so once every 7 years, you're to let the land rest. So let's suppose you got a bunch of apples out here on your trees, and the apples mature. And ordinarily, you'd go out and pick them, put them in boxes, and take them to town and sell them. But in this case, it's the Land Sabbath year, 2005. That's this year. Happened to be a Land Sabbath year this year. 1998 was a Land Sabbath year. 1991 was a Land Sabbath year. 2005, 2012, be another Land Sabbath. You let the apples drop on the ground. They rot. and they create organic material underneath the tree. And that's enough organic material, that's enough food for that tree for the next 6 years. And that's because all plants need organic material. Some need more than others. For instance, a cedar tree will actually convert about 90% inorganic material into wood. But it still needs 10% organic material to live. A carrot needs about 90% organic material and about 10% inorganic material to live. It's higher up the food chain is what it boils down to, and so humans don't eat wood, but we do eat carrots. So we eat the carrot. Now, God comes along and says, now if you want to maintain soil fertility forever, you have to let the land rest once every 7 years. Now, you don't have to be an economics major. You don't have to have a degree in economics to figure out what's wrong with that law. Immediately, you can see that you lose 14.28% of the productive capacity of your apple tree. Yes, once every 7 years, you lose 100% of the crop. You lose 14.25%, rounding it off to 15%. You're losing about 15% of your income, 15% of your productivity. So you say to yourself, well, I don't want to lose that 15%, so I'm not going to practice that stupid land Sabbath law. I'm not a religious fanatic. I'm not some kind of a nut. I'm a scientist. I'm erudite. I'm educated, and I've got letters after my name. All right, so in Kansas, they actually did that. In 1880, the average protein content of wheat was 24%. Now, when I tell people that today, they look at me like, you know, you got to be nuts. There's no such thing as 24% protein wheat. Never has been, isn't now, and never will be. Well, go tell it to those people back in 1880. So people say, well, they had bad reporting and bad science, and they didn't know how to figure out the protein content of wheat. Boys and girls, in 1880, the people in Kansas growing wheat knew how to figure the protein content. It's 24%. I would contend with you, the people in 1880 were a little smarter than they are in 2005, and you'll find that there were less... Many fewer people in 1880 had degrees after their names. It's my contention that going to college makes people stupid. If you haven't figured that out yet, that's my conclusion. By 1950, 70 years after, 70 years later, the protein content of wheat in Kansas was 18%. It had dropped 25%, 6 percentage points. Today, in the year 2005, the average protein content of wheat in Kansas is 7 to 13%. What happened to the protein content? It's down by half. And I mentioned to you in the last program, that's the cause of our problem. We're eating nutritionless food because we use hybrid seed, but we also refuse to practice the land Sabbath. Now, when you don't practice the land Sabbath, what happens? The crops that you're hauling off the ground are consuming more and more of the organic material in the soil. So the organic material in the soil goes down. As it goes down, soil fertility goes down. As the soil fertility goes down, there are less nutrients in the ground for the plants to eat. The less nutrients in the plant in the ground for the plant to eat, the less nutrients are in the plant for you to eat when you eat the plant. So you get less and less protein, you get less and less iron, and less copper, less and less minerals, less and less nutrients. As you get fewer and fewer or less and less nutrients, your immune system gets weaker and weaker, and when disease pathogens come into your body, your immune system is unable to fight them off. Now, to solve this problem, as the soil fertility went down, some bright guy who went to college and came out with a degree said, listen, there are three basic nutrients in the ground. It's nitrogen and potash and potassium. So if we were to go to the oil refinery and take the surplus, the waste material that they've got over here in this about 1900 now, or 19, around World War I, the Germans came up with this neat idea that we could add these three nutrients to the soil and it will make the plants grow. And boy, does it. Boy, does it. You know, you put that anhydrous ammonia on the ground, you put those chemical fertilizers on the ground, and my God, just look across that cornfield and it's all green and it just really looks like $1 million. And those plants really grow good. Of course, there's another side effect that comes into this program. That is, the plants grow real good, but you see, those aren't the three only nutrients in the soil. There are 92 minerals. And you haven't replaced those minerals in the soil. So you got this real nice, neat, healthy plant. In fact, maybe you've got a hybrid seed over here, and instead of getting 30 to 60 bushels of corn to the acre, you're getting 100 to 130 or 50 bushels to the acre. Now remember, last time I told you about Adolf Steinbrum. Remember that guy? Adolf Steinbrum. Let me get his name here. S-T-E-M, I believe it was. Steinbrum. S-T-E-M-B-R-O-M. Remember? He put the matter into perspective by having samples of corn tested for nutrients usually added to commercial feeds. When compared to more than 4,000 samples of hybrid corn tested in 10 Midwest states in a recent year, Steinbrum's open pollinated corn contained 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, 205% more manganese. The same result was also seen in the content of calcium, sodium, magnesium, and zinc. Now, the creator, he came along one day and says, I want to create these people, these humans, and I've got to feed them, and when I feed them, I've got to have nutrients. And so he engineered and designed into the corn and the wheat and various food products that we humans eat the correct ratios and balances of protein and vitamins and minerals. It's there naturally. I mean, you got to get up in the morning and go out and do something to screw it up. I mean, you got to go out there and farm 7 years in a row. I mean, you got to farm 7, 14, 21, 28. It doesn't destroy soil nutrition in one cycle. It takes many cycles. But between 1880 and 1950, farming that land year after year, never letting it rest, succeeded in the objective. It reduced the protein content on average in the state of Kansas by 25%. It also reduced the mineral content by 25% and everything else. Now, if that was your goal, well, then you've succeeded beyond your wildest expectations. If that wasn't your goal, it's a side effect that maybe you need to take into consideration. Because I contend that this is a disaster that's about to overwhelm us. And it's a disaster that's totally preventable. I mentioned this to you. You know, wars are preventable. We didn't have to go to war in Iraq. We wanted to go to war in Iraq. We didn't go to war in Iraq because of weapons of mass destruction. We went to war in Iraq because we want to steal 25% of the world's oil supply. And that's the real bottom line to this story. One old veteran, you know, he was up in Nebraska. He said, what we need to do is just go over there and tell them we're taking your damn oil and go take it. And get off this hypocrisy crap of telling them we want to help you with your democracy over here. All right, so the moral of the story is that if you don't want to practice the land Sabbath, the soil is going to become weaker and weaker, and it's going to produce weaker and weaker plants. As it produces weaker and weaker plants, you get less of a crop. In other words, you're not going to get 60 bushels per acre, you're going to get 30. So if some guy goes to college and he comes out and he says, well, if we hybridize the seed, we can increase the productivity. And so they use hybrid seed with irrigation. and chemical fertilizers and raised the production from 60 bushels to the acre to 120 bushels to the acre, but it's only got half as much or less protein and other nutrients in the final product. So you're eating foodless food, which then causes weak immune systems, which then leaves your body open to disease, which then requires that you go to the hospital for treatment, which requires a lot of money, which now requires health insurance. You know, it's a choice that we make in life. Most people have chosen that course of action. Now, there's another factor called insects. We notice that when the plants get weaker and weaker, insects, also known as parasites, come in and eat the plants. If you've ever picked up an apple off the ground and looked at it, and you see that there's a little hole, you cut the apple open, and sure enough, inside there's a worm. That's not very appetizing, but here's the way the design of that works. God designed those worms to attack the apples that have low nutrient content. Put another way, insects only eat weak plants. Insects do not eat the healthy plants, they eat the weak ones. So if you practice land Sabbaths and Jubilees, if you practice open pollinated seed, if you have good, healthy, strong soil, you have good, healthy, strong plants, good, healthy, strong fruits, which the insects do not attack. The purpose for the insect is to attack and to destroy the weak, nutritionless apple so that you won't eat it. A little safety valve that's built in to protect your health. Now, we don't want to do that. That causes us to lose money. So we want to go to the chemical company and get DDT. So we come out with the DDT and we spread on the apple tree. As the apples grow, it kills all the insects. Now the apples grow big and red and they look really luscious. And we sell those apples. But those apples have a shortage of vitamins and minerals. We eat the apples with the shortage of the vitamins and minerals, and then we don't get the right nutrients in our bodies, and so therefore we get sick, and then we need health insurance and hospitals and all the rest. See how simple that is? No big mystery. Now, the apples up in Wenatchee, Washington, back in the early days, when people had good, healthy, strong soil. See, when they first came onto this land in America, the soil was healthy and strong. And then they didn't practice land Sabbaths, and the land got weak. And so the insects came in and ate the apples, and so they needed a spray. And the only thing they knew of was arsenic, so they sprayed arsenic on the trees. Worked for about 30 or 40 years. But the arsenic built up in the soil, and pretty soon it made the soil so toxic that the apple trees couldn't grow in that toxic arsenic soil. And so now it's a moonscape. It's just a wasteland. The land is totally poisoned, and it won't grow fruit trees at all. That's the results of growing your apples without practicing land Sabbaths. So we Americans, we're not dummies. We say, well, to hell with that land. We'll go over here and make some new land. And they came up with new chemicals. Learning the lesson that arsenic will destroy the land, they came up with new chemicals. But as you spray these chemicals on these trees year after year, the insects that survive. So you can't kill 100% of the insects. You kill 98% of the insects. The 2% that survive because they're stronger than the chemical concoction you're using to kill them, and they become resistant to these chemicals. So now you have to spray 14 sprayings per year. You're spraying about every 2 weeks. You used to spray once, and then twice, and then three times a year, and then five. Now they're up to 14 times. Boys and girls, I would contend that by the time you have to spray your trees every day during the growing season, it will cost so much money for the spray that it will make the crop of apples insignificant. you know, there's a point in time in the economics of it when you can't do this any longer. And that's where we're headed. That's called disaster. That's called catastrophe. That's the end of us when we can't grow food anymore. So poisoning your land in order to grow food is probably not the best solution to this problem. And that maybe we ought to consider land Sabbaths and Jubilees again, and open pollinated seed in place of mingled seed. And maybe we ought to just forget about GMOs altogether. I know it's a wild new concept. Let's go back and practice those farming practices that made America so successful, so prosperous, so wealthy between 1787 and 1950. If your kid can't read today, have you thought about going back to 1900 and practicing what it was that we were doing in 1900 to teach Johnny how to read? Because Johnny could read in 1900 and 1920 and 1940. Johnny didn't have any problem learning how to read, and he could read. Today in 2005, Johnny can't read, and he can't add, subtract, multiply, or divide. And he can't write either. I know it's a wild new idea, but have you thought about going back and doing what it was that you did when you were successful? In business, we do that. If we try something and it doesn't work, we go back to what worked. We go back and do that which produced our original success. Hang on, I got to give you a reminder. If I can find my paper, here it is. All right, the reminder is you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log, schedule, and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, history, religion, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order your free introductory CD package, call direct 417-273-4967. That's area code 417-273-4967. And the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, so I pointed out to you that in Kansas in 1880, the protein content of wheat was 24%, dropped to 18% by 1950, 7 to 13% today. Now, if we practice the land Sabbath, we lose about 15% of our productivity. We're greedy and selfish, and we don't want to lose that 15%, so we're prepared to farm 7 years in a row, make the extra 15%, but then spend 20 or 25% on fertilizers and insecticides. Yeah, that's right, you got to spend money on chemical fertilizers and insecticides to make up for the shortfall. And one time I was talking to a couple of Jewish fellows from New York, and they had a vineyard up there. And I asked them, I said, have you ever thought about practicing land Sabbaths and Jubilees, and they said, yes, we've thought about it, but we have decided not to because we operate a multi-million dollar operation and we're afraid that it might fail. So they're afraid that land Sabbaths won't work. They know that chemical fertilizers and sprays do work. They also know that every year the soil gets weaker and they have to use more and more chemical fertilizer, and that the insects become more and more tolerant to the sprays and have to use more and more toxic sprays every year. That will go on until there is a final point in which the ground will no longer produce enough revenue to pay for the sprays and the chemical fertilizers. Now, when God designed this program, He designed it so that it would last, it would run forever. We came along and said, we're going to take an extra 15%. Yeah, you can do that for a long time. But there comes a final end when you get nothing, as I pointed out up in Wenatchee, Washington. Yeah, you can do that until you finally poison the ground and it won't grow an apple tree, much less an apple. Now, insects are parasites, and the parasites only attack weak hosts. And the trees become weak because they don't have enough nutrition. Just like human beings become weak when they don't have enough nutrition. And then the disease organisms come in, and the disease organisms are parasites that attack weak hosts. The real solution to disease, boys and girls, and the biologic disasters that come from these disease pandemics is to have a strong, healthy immune system. And you get that by eating good, strong, healthy food and living a good, clean life. Clean water, clean air, which doesn't say much for Los Angeles, New York, or Chicago, does it? Now, because we have practiced these illegal practices for so long, and because it now takes more and more chemical fertilizers and more strong pesticides, we have to come up with a new solution, and it's called genetically modified organisms, GMOs. GMOs. Listen to this story. The Russian scientist planned a simple experiment to see if eating genetically modified soybeans might influence offspring. What she got, however, was an astounding result that may threaten a multi-billion dollar industry. Arina Ermakova, a leading scientist at the Institute of Higher Nervous Activity and Neurophysiology of the Russian Academy of Sciences, added GM soy flour, 5 to 7 grams, to the diet of female rats. Other females were fed non-GM soy or no soy at all. The experimental diet began 2 weeks before the rats conceived and continued through pregnancy and nursing. Ermakova's first surprise came when her pregnant rat started giving birth. Some pups from GM-fed mothers were quite a bit smaller. After 2 weeks, 36% of them weighed less than 20 grams, compared to about 6% from the other groups. But the real shock came when the rats started dying. Within 3 weeks, 25 of the 45 test rats, 55.6% of the rats in the GM soy group died, compared to only 3 out of 33 rats, 9% from the non-GM soy group, and 3 of 44, 6.8% of the non-soy controls. Ermakova preserved several major organs from the mother rats and the offspring of those rats, and drew up designs for a detailed organ analysis, created plans to repeat and expand the feeding trial, and promptly ran out of research money. The $70,000 needed was not expected to arrive for a year. Therefore, when she was invited to present her research at a symposium organized by the National Association for Genetic Security, Ermakova wrote preliminary studies on the top of her paper, and she presented it on October the 10th, 2005, at a session devoted to the risks of GM food. Her findings are hardly welcome by an industry already steeped in controversy. The soy that she was testing was Monsanto's Roundup Ready variety. Its DNA has bacterial genes added that allow the soy plant to survive applications of Monsanto's Roundup brand herbicide. About 85% of the soy grown in the United States is Roundup Ready. Since soy derivatives, including oil, flour, and lecithin, are found in the majority of processed foods sold in the United States, many Americans eat ingredients derived from Roundup Ready soy every day. The Food and Drug Administration does not require any safety tests on genetically modified foods. If Monsanto or other biotech companies declare their food safe, the agency has no further questions. The rationale for this hands-off position is a sentence in the FDA's 1992 policy that states, quote, "The agency is not aware of any information showing that foods derived by these new methods differ from other foods in any meaningful or uniform way," unquote. God, I can't contain myself. Now, I showed you here not too long ago when we interviewed a scientist at the FDA. And the FDA policy is, we are not aware, we don't know about, we have never heard that there's any difference between GM-modified foods grown or open-pollinated or hybrid seeds. We don't know of any differences. And the reason that they don't know of any differences, have you ever wondered about that? How come they don't know? It's because they're not looking. It's because they've never run any tests. It's because they don't want to know. They're deliberately ignorant. They're stupid or they're dumb on purpose. That's what the bottom line is. Now, Monsanto, they work like President Bush. When President Bush wanted to go to war against Iraq, he told us about all of the intelligence that they had gathered that would tend to show that the Iraqis had weapons of mass destruction, carefully avoiding any evidence or any intelligence that might indicate that the Iraqis did not have any weapons of mass destruction. Well, that makes all the sense in the world. After all, if you go into court and then you produce evidence that this guy is a rapist and raped this victim, and you produce absolutely no evidence that he's innocent, no evidence that he's not the rapist, no evidence that he couldn't be the rapist because he was in Los Angeles at the date and time that this rape took place, he can be convicted and indeed will be convicted each and every time. And that's just the way life is. I mean, we don't have to be rocket scientists to figure that out. So the reason that we don't know of any differences between genetically modified foods and foods that are grown conventionally is because we are not looking for any differences. Not here in America, but they are in Russia. The Russians are suspicious. And the statement, it turns out, was deceptive. Oh my God. You mean to tell me our government is deceiving us? If you can't trust your government, who can you trust? My God, boys and girls, if you can't trust George Bush, who can you trust? Now, documents made public from a lawsuit years later revealed that the FDA's own experts agreed that GM foods are different and they might lead to hard-to-detect allergens, toxins, new diseases, or nutritional problems. And they had urged their superiors to require long-term safety studies, and they were ignored. The person in charge of the Food and Drug Administration policy was conveniently Monsanto's former attorney and later their vice president. All right, now hang on a second. I can't contain myself again. The Food and Drug Administration has a policy. When Monsanto walks in the door and says, here's our study, here's our evidence, we accept it because we're not looking for any contrary information. Monsanto's products come before the FDA, and the head of the FDA is a former Monsanto attorney who later becomes Monsanto's vice president. My God, there can't be any conflict of interest there, can there? That just has to be coincidence, isn't it? I mean, come on, boys and girls, don't you think it's time that we grow up, wake up, and smell the coffee, for crying out loud? Have we become so damn mentally defective that we can't see red and white, green and blue, daylight and dark? Now let's face reality here. God tells you that you're to practice land Sabbaths and don't mingle your seed. Your government through the FDA and your corporations called Monsanto say God's got his head up his rectal region, and of course we don't want to practice land Sabbaths. That would cost us 15%. And of course we want genetically modified foods. To hell with this law that says don't mingle your seed. Well, here again, boys and girls, we made our choice. Our choice is hybrid seeds, chemical fertilizers, toxic insecticides, no land Sabbaths. And as a result of that, we have the highest incidence of disease in the United States of any country in the world. We're the most technologically advanced. We have the most technologically advanced system of agriculture in the world and the sickest people to go along with it. Now, if what you want is advanced technological agriculture with sick people, boys and girls, you have arrived. I pointed this out to you a time or two. I'll share it with you again. In 1918, when they were drafting all these people into the Army, they gave them a physical. So here are young men coming into the Army, 18, 19, 20, 22, 20, 24 years old. And these people coming in, they found out 60% of them were healthy with no symptoms. That's not bad. 40% had sick symptoms. 40% of the people of America in 1918 were sick. There was something wrong with them. They had flat feet. They wore glasses. They had a bad ear, couldn't hear. They had an allergy. They had diabetes or something. 40% of Americans were sick. Today, in the year 2005, it's 99 sick and one healthy. Only one person in 100 has no symptoms. Now, between 1918 and today, boys and girls, you know, just pay attention here, in about 85 years or so, we have developed technology. We have developed chemical fertilizers and sprays and dyes and chemicals and 87,000 chemical compounds in our society and our everyday way of life. Now, cancer rates have gone from 1 in 33 to 1 in 2. Heart attacks, which were practically non-existent in 1900, is today's leading killer in the United States. More people die from heart attack and stroke than any other disease. Cancer is number two. Cancer kills 500,000 people a year in the United States. Now, if that's what you want, hey, look, talk about a disaster. Now, this is a man-made disaster, which is working hand in glove with what we call natural disasters. I'm coming to that. Going on. There have been less than 20 published peer-reviewed animal feeding safety studies and no human clinical trials at all, in spite of the fact that millions of people eat GM corn, GM soy, GM cotton, and canola every day. There are no adequate tests on biochemistry, immunology, tissue pathology, gut function, liver function, and kidney function, and animal feeding studies are too short to adequately test for cancer, reproductive problems, or effects in the next generation. This makes Ermakova's research particularly significant. It is the first research of its kind. And get this, this research comes out of Russia. Now, you can't trust them damn Russians over there, can you? Hey, listen, those Europeans over there aren't all dumb, you know. They sat over there and said, we don't want that GM crap over here, and they've banned it. I don't blame them. I wouldn't eat it either. And I don't eat it. I don't eat out of the supermarket. It doesn't mean I don't buy anything out of the supermarket, but boy, am I careful. I'm getting more and more careful. I've said before, and I'll say it again. If there's anything in a supermarket that's fit for human consumption, it is so well hidden, I haven't been able to find it. Now, other studies on Roundup Ready soy also raise serious questions. Research on the liver, the body's major detoxifier, showed that rats, when fed GM soy, developed misshapen nuclei and other cellular anomalies. This indicates increased metabolic activity, probably resulting from a major insult to that organ. Rats also show changes in the pancreas, including a huge drop in the production of major enzymes, which inhibit digestion. Cooked, genetically modified soy contains twice the amount of soy lectin, which can also block nutrient assimilation. And one study showed that GM soy has 14% less isoflavonones, which are touted as cancer-fighting. So they have less cancer-fighting, and they have more of that which blocks nutrient assimilation. So what nutrients are available in it can't be assimilated. It's kind of like pasteurized milk. Pasteurized milk is just loaded with calcium. The problem is that once you pasteurize it, it becomes unavailable to your body. So you can drink all of that pasteurized milk that you want, but you don't get any calcium out of it, or very little. I won't say none, but very little. Now, of course, nobody wants to drink raw milk, do they? No, nobody except raving lunatics like George Gordon. I drink raw milk every day, about a gallon, every day. I'm an old man. I'm still in full health. I'm out here building fence, doing my work out here every day. I'm not as good as, not as fast as, not as tough as, or as strong as I was 30 years ago, but I'm still putting in a day's work. I can still work most of you city kids right into the ground. You couch potatoes come out here, and I, as an old man, can outwork you. Ought to make you ashamed, but it doesn't, does it? An animal feeding study published by Monsanto showed no apparent problems with GM soy, but their research has been severely criticized as rigged to avoid finding problems. Oh, no. No, that couldn't be true. Monsanto would rig the results of their own tests for profit and gain in America? Payola? Bribes? Lying? Cheating? Chicanery? Enron? In America? Can you believe it? Monsanto used mature animals instead of young, more sensitive animals. They diluted their GM soy up to 12-fold using too much protein, never weighed the organs, and had huge variations in starting weights. The study's nutrient comparison between GM and non-GM soy revealed significant differences in the ash, fat, and carbohydrate content, lower levels of protein, a fatty acid. And Monsanto researchers had actually omitted the most incriminating nutritional differences, which were later discovered and made public. For example, the published paper from Monsanto showed a 27% increase in a known allergen, while the recovered data raised that to a threefold or sevenfold increase. After the soy was cooked, this might explain why soy allergies in the UK skyrocketed by 50% soon after GM soy was introduced. The gene that is inserted into GM soy produces a protein with two sections that are identical to known allergens. This might also account for the increased allergy rate. Furthermore, the only human feeding trial ever conducted confirmed that this inserted gene transfers into the DNA of bacteria inside your intestines. This means that long after you decide to stop eating GM soy, your own gut bacteria may still be producing this potentially allergenic protein inside your digestive tract. Isn't that just real special? Now, I can remember as a kid, just looking back, 50 years or so, I never heard of anybody with hay fever or allergies. Never heard of such a thing. I never heard of AIDS. Muscular dystrophy, multiple sclerosis. Today they're household, everyday garden variety terms. In fact, here in our local area, they got an allergy report. They report to you on the weather forecast on the 6 o'clock news every night what the pollen count is in the air for you allergy sufferers. You know why you got allergies, boys and girls, is because of the crap you call food that you eat every day. You people eat what I wouldn't feed to my dogs. As they say here, dogs. See, we live in the South. You don't have dogs here. They're dogs. Down in the holler. See, we don't have hollows, valleys. We have hollers. That's what you get when you live in the South. Your dog is down in the holler. So we find that Monsanto dummies up the information that they give to the FDA. The FDA is headed by a Monsanto executive who later comes back to Monsanto as a vice president. And we call this objective science. Oh, God, give me a break, would you? Give me a break. And we Americans call ourselves educated. Educated. And I can say that again. Now, let me go back here as we come to our conclusion here. There are natural disasters. Natural disasters are caused by God. They're caused by God because He's furious with us and uses the word, I will come against you in fury and punish you seven times more for your sin. Sin is the transgression of the law. Sin is crime. You break my law and I'm going to get real furious. And that's because I'm a jealous God. I'm not just an ordinary, everyday, garden variety loving God. I'm a jealous God, and I'm ticked off. And He says, I will lay none of these diseases upon you if you practice my law, but if you don't practice my law, I am going to plague you with diseases that you don't even know the names of. You remember, I read that to you in Leviticus 26. The cause of these diseases, boys and girls, are anything but natural. They are absolutely not natural at all. They are totally unnatural and they're caused by God and they are a curse to us. Now, if you want to get out from under the curse, what you do is you obey God and keep His commandments. You practice land Sabbaths and jubilees. You forget that 15% and concentrate on land Sabbaths and jubilees, and you'll make more in the long run. You will spend less on chemical fertilizers and sprays. You'll produce a good food that doesn't produce bad health in your customers. All right, so much for today. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, talking about natural disasters and why it is that natural disasters are anything but natural. Eric, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week, 7 days, here in the United States and around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, just go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to you as an individual by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information about that, go to our homeschooling page on our website, georgegordon.org. Time is up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.